Welcome to Exponential Trust Times, the unique AI channel of trust that creates bridges between AI expert and tech enthusiast. I'm Dr. Lubna Kari, Executive AI Business Leader and Digital Transformer at Fortune 500 and CAC40 for more than two decades, and the President of AI Exponential Thinker. Within our innovative concept, Share the Stage, we received a question from the audience to offer a fair opportunity to connect and meet personally our guests. So let's listen to our guest in this special moment of authenticity. Humanize AI is a unique, fair opportunity to raise various perspectives about artificial intelligence and the mysterious unknown future in times of exponential technology. And today, my guest is Toju Duc, a program manager at Google, where you lead various responsible AI programs across Google products and research teams with a focus on large-scale models and responsible AI processes. Also, Toju is the founder of Diverse AI. You are a speaker, author, and thought leader with a new book coming soon, and we'll talk about that. Super excited to have you, Toju, with us today, and welcome to the show, Humanize AI.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
It's truly a pleasure. So as everyone know, this podcast, it's a show. We have couple stages. We are a kind of a virtual world, right? Where we have couple stages, and in every stage, we stop for a couple minutes and we will address a different topic. So let's start by the first stage. It's about your authentic journey. So for those who don't know, Toju, you have an authentic journey, really starting by marketing leadership roles, to find yourself product lead in the region Europe, Middle East, Africa, right? Then a program manager for responsible AI at Google for almost a decade. Now, the question is, how was the journey so far? And like, if you have like a kind of three magic or let's say tough moments that let you where you are today, what will be those kind of momentum?
Yeah, cool. That's a good question. So I think my journey from marketing into responsible AI, you know, some people would say it's luck. I think it was a bit of luck, opportunity, and intention. I worked in marketing for a couple of years, and I realized, you know, that there was a cap for my growth there. I couldn't see myself growing further beyond marketing. I felt there'll be a limit to my skill sets. And that was my personal point of view. Because I'm naturally very creative and I tend to get a bit restless if I'm doing the same thing over and over again. I always love to grow and have personal and career growth. So it's very hard to keep me in the same place for a very long time. And that's the same thing with marketing. So I just kind of like observed the trajectory and I saw that, you know, even marketing leads is still the same thing that you're literally doing. You're just leading the teams as opposed to doing the operational tasks. So I kind of like made notes of that, but I didn't make an intentional step to leave marketing, but I did notice that I might not last long in marketing. And, you know, yours truly, I got a job within Google. It was to work with a lot of marketing professionals. And I loved that aspect of it because I worked as a product specialist. So that means I wasn't really doing marketing, but I was talking to marketing professionals and I was helping them optimize and grow their Google accounts and giving them some little tidbits based from a specialist point of view. And I enjoyed that for quite some time. Then I moved into being a product lead for EMEA on travel. Then based on my usual restlessness, you know, after a few years of doing that and out of sheer curiosity, I decided to look into machine learning a little bit more. I attended a training for ML and I loved it after that. And as they say, the rest is history. So, you know, I just started reading a little bit more about it and speaking about it because I was like, why is no one speaking about ML? It's amazing. It's powerful. And then along the line, I realized the issues with ML as well. And I was like, I can't believe these things exist. Like, what sort of world are we going to leave our kids to if it still propagates so much bias? Imagine automating discrimination and bias into a machine or into technology. Like, that will go around like wildfire. You can't hold that back. You know, human beings, we can still reason with ourselves and do a lot of campaigns and say Black Lives Matter and so many other things like human rights and equality. But with machines, you can't talk to them, right? They're out there and they'll do what they were programmed to do. So, you know, I intentionally approached Google AI and I said, this is what I've been doing outside Google, but I'd love to work on this team as a program manager, applying transferable skills as well. Understanding that I didn't have any computer science background. I came from marketing, and previous to that, I was doing digital media, and my first degree was in sociology and political science, which is perfect for responsible AI. But at the time, I didn't even know that. But, you know, because I was really interested in the field, really passionate about it and drawn to it, I knew I didn't need to start all over again and go back to university to study computer science. But there was lots of transferable skills based on the years of experience I had that I could apply into the current role. And Google is amazing. So they allow you to do like 20% roles where you can either work on a different team for 20% of your time. And you can also do like a rotation where you leave your current team and go work on the other team if your manager lets you for like 3 to 6 months. So that was my opportunity to get in there because I was able to do a 20%, then a rotation. And after that, I got the role. And I've been there for about 2 years now doing the role.
Amazing. And I know very well the space, the Google space, let's say. And it's a great opportunity when you have the ability, I mean, the possibility to have the support to switch from one job to another and to, you know, to build your progress and your journey within the same company. And I think Google is one of those companies that offer those opportunity, right, to the internal collaborators, which is amazing, I think. Now, the question is, like, now you are working on the responsible AI. So we will move to the stage two. And the stage two is named the magic of technology because I'm working on in this space for 2 decades. So it's just magic. When you talk about AI, you work on AI, you help all these customers, these collaborators, it's just magic. Now we will talk about much more generative AI. It's a big hype this last month, right? Generative AI is being a kind of revolution, let's say, where businesses are looking to implement rapidly use cases to improve their customer experiences, productivity, and much more. And the lenses are so large, right? Recently, you were invited also to as panelist in the Generative AI Summit to address the topic of responsible AI practices for businesses. Now, we are very curious to know, firstly, are we truly living a new revolution based on generative AI? And also, what are the opportunities for company?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I do believe we're in a fourth revolution. Some people say it's a fifth revolution. Whatever number we want to give it, there is a form of revolution. And I think if anyone is really paying attention and being honest with themselves, they know that things are going at a very rapid pace. I don't want to say beyond our control because we are still the ones building it, but it's still going really rapidly and it's almost beyond our control because if one company doesn't build it, another one quickly does it, right? So something is happening in the world today on Earth that is within technology and it's a revolution. I wouldn't necessarily say generative AI is the revolution as opposed to AI in general. But generative AI is now the leading AI technology anyway, right? It's a part of AI and it is leading. So you can, you know, it's still safe to say generative AI is a revolution, but I'd rather just generalize it as AI in general. And I mean, it's powerful for businesses because of the capabilities that it provides, right? And we're seeing so many new research breakthroughs from, you know, ML model being able to convert text to video and convert text to audio and convert text to images. And there's so much happening where, you know, you cannot even identify AI generated art as opposed to human generated art. And there's so many talks around copyrights and there's just so much going on. But AI has always been a technology that is beneficial to humanity. Right, whether it's businesses who are looking for profit or whether it's non-for-profit organizations or healthcare, it's meant to help humanity, right? That's the whole point of technology, is meant to lend a helping hand to help humanity. And it can still do that. And it's actually doing that right now. A lot of businesses are recognizing the powerful capabilities of AI and generative AI. And unfortunately, some of them are laying off their stuff to replace it with AI. because they feel that it will be more productive. But of course, that said, any new nascent technology will have its issues, and we are very well aware that AI and generative AI has its limitations and capabilities. You know, it makes up stuff, it's not very factual, it hallucinates. And there's a lot of problems around anthropomorphism, which I think an anthropomorphism, for those who don't know, is just attributing a human-like attribute to something, mm-hmm. right? Or a religious attribute to something. And I think with large language models in particular, it's difficult not to anthropomorphize it, because we're already talking to it, relating to it like it's
yes.
a human being. We're asking it a question, hey, tell me about this. And then it gives you an answer. You're like, okay, but tell me about that. And then you start asking it questions. Who are you? How old are you? Where do you come from? Do you have a shadow self? And of course, it's going to answer you like a human being. And we forget that we're chatting with something that is not a human being. So I think that problem of anthropomorphization is such a hard word. I don't even know who made that word.
Yeah, it's a hard word. Definitely.
It's so long, maybe that's why they did it on purpose. But the problem with that is, you know, it's still existent today. I don't know, there's lots of research going on around it, but it's still a very prevalent problem. Is how do you prevent yourself from anthropomorphizing the large language model that you're operating with and giving it an attribute that it doesn't really have? But yeah, in general, generative AI should be great. It's great so far. It has its limitations. And I just really believe that for any business and any individual using them, you have to be AI literate and aware of the positives and negatives of the technology that you're using. What are the pros and the cons? What do you need it for? Be very intentional about the uses that you're trying to get out of it, right? The benefits. What are you trying to do? What problem are you trying to solve? And how do you solve it? I saw a news article from Bloomberg yesterday that said a lawyer used one of the large language models to file a lot of cases, to get a lot of cases, and they were all incorrect. And he didn't fact check it. And now he might lose his license as a lawyer. So these are main issues that are happening there. It's like, don't just use it because everybody's using it. Educate yourself about this technology that you're using. Unfortunately, there are not a lot of manuals. You know, when you buy a TV or buy another form of technology that's hardware, you have a manual that nobody really reads. But right now, there are no manuals on these things. They're just out there. And you need to know if you're going to use it, especially if you're using it in terms of work purposes, you need to know what the pros and cons are so that you don't, you know, deliver any terrible, incorrect results or outcomes or decisions to humans who are most potentially your customers and people who could be harmed or damaged by it.
I don't know, Tojo, if you experimented in your work, but now I think the businesses are looking for, I'm more hearing the hype of generative AI. Now the question is, are they really interested to implement generative AI? I know AI, it's a fact now, okay? And now it's been much more than 10 years, right? So it's, I think now it's such mature space. Now, but generative AI, it's still quite new. I'm not talking about Google, you know, OpenAI and so on, right? For them, it's not new. And they are well advanced in that. I'm talking about the businesses, right, that you are working with. And for sure, I'm working with those businesses as well. Are they really interested, or is it much more about being aware about what's possible, or is it about, no, I'm ready, I want to implement it, right? And I'm looking for the right use cases. Where they are stand today?
Mm-hmm. Well, from what I've seen and from what I've read, I think it's the latter. I think businesses are ready to take it on because they feel, you know, it depends on the side of the world they are as well, the geographic location. I understand that in the US, everybody's all large language models, happy, you know, they're all for it, can never do any bad. In Europe, we're more conservative. So we're like, what about our data? What about privacy? You know, we don't just take everything that is shown at us, you know, and think it's the best thing since sliced bread. But I think in general, from what I've seen and observed, because there's so many applications right now that are using generative AI, it's so easy to build an application based on, you know, the architecture that is already there. That businesses are, there are lots of businesses that sprang up after ChatGPT came up, right? Over 100 businesses just came as a result of ChatGPT, new startups. So there are lots of businesses that are building applications that are providing some form of service and solution to a seeming problem for a business.
It's quite exactly, it's exactly the case, because I think the landscape of AI generative is exploding very quick. And as you said, they are offering the services, the API and so on. So that's why I think businesses are now ready to jump in and use it for their use cases for sure. But again, like once people, I found that from November 2022, like in the range of 1 month, I had 5 interviews from media just asking the question about generative AI and ChatGPT and Midjourney. And, you know, is it a risk? Is it a threat? What are the jobs that are like kind of will be in a way replaced by or not? And so on, right? And what are the businesses that are now ready to go in, and what are the ones that will take much more time, think about, and probably experiment a little bit, but not implemented in a production way, right? In a very useful way within their businesses and so on. So, like, it's not anymore a hype. It's a reality. And I think this is what even yesterday we in the lunch, in the dinner with Anousheh Ansari, who is the CEO of XPRIZE, she asked me the same questions. What do you think about generative AI? There's a lot of hype over there. So I think my perception is, but I think we need to educate much more people about that. It's not only about business, because we are doing it in our work, right? Which is fantastic, but also we need to bring it to the society, right? We need to bring it to education system. We need to bring it to everywhere in order to make it much more understood by everyone, not technically, but at least the opportunity and the risk out of it. I mean, in the both sides, it's very important to highlight it. And I know in your work and your talk and so on, you are talking about that often as well. Now, Tojo, if you agree, let's move to the stage three. And the stage three is named diversity and inclusion, because it's very, very important, as you know, when we come to build AI trust technology. This is how we call it, trust technology, for years. People call it a responsible AI, but for me, it's the trust. We have to build the trust. And it's so hard to build the trust without having diverse people around the table who are building and developing and designing those products, intelligent products and smart products. So diversity and inclusion is key to build responsible AI products and services, as you know. And for those who don't know, we have like a kind of scoop here in this show today. And I'm so happy to have this like kind of start exclusivity on that. You wrote a book, Tojo, coming soon, right? And the name is Building Responsible AI Algorithms, a framework for transparency, fairness, safety, privacy, and robustness. I think you said everything on the title. And I'm sure that people will be so curious to know much more about the book. But before talking a little bit about the book, how you perceive the universe of developing AI globally, but also locally in UK, right? And how can we invite much more women and diverse people to jump on tech opportunity? This is the first part of my question. The second part of my question will be about an exclusive insight. If we can ask, can you tell us much more about the book? And also, can we have like a kind of scoop? And who should read the book as well?
Cool. Two loaded questions. So I'll start with the first one on DEI and opportunities and what we can do. It's quite interesting you bring this up because I was at the City of London a couple of weeks ago, and it was actually last week, and we're talking about the same thing. How can we help women move into digital and tech roles, especially women who are mid-career? What's quite interesting is Goldman Sachs released a report in March saying that 300 million jobs, women jobs that are taken by women, is most likely going to be replaced by AI, 300 million, because there are jobs like the payroll and clerks and secretaries. Mm-hmm. And again, it just reveals and shows societal biases. Why do women have those roles in the first place? I remember way back years ago, it was always a known fact that women should go into sales and marketing because they're supposed to look pretty, and you know, they're trying to get new clients. It was so disgusting. It's still so disgusting, right? Mm-hmm. Those conversations have kind of changed, but there's still a lot of societal biases within women and within everybody else in society. What sort of jobs are women? Are women even supposed to be working at all, or should they just be at home taking care of their kids, right? And feeling like, you know, for those who have kids, and those who don't have kids and are not maternal, I don't plan to have kids, are they supposed to be have a job, right? There's so much biases in society around the role of women. That's the first problem. So I think that's the first problem that needs to be addressed. And it's a good thing I mentioned City of London, because it's a governmental organization in the UK. And it's something that I'm trying to tell them as well, is it's not just about digital now, it's about AI. Like, digital conversation was light years away a few years back. Now we're talking about AI. You know, you're moving into digital and tech, but we need to upskill women to be ready to get into AI, especially when there's an upcoming disruption of jobs in AI. Now, it's very hard to predict what sort of jobs that will come into play, right? Sure. But people at least need to be aware of AI, of its functionalities, of the current needs. So like right now, you know, large language models are really still in the show when it comes to generative AI. They're the most used so far. They seem to be more advanced in compared to the other models. And there's lots of talk around prompt engineering and reinforcement learning through human feedback. These are like the new buzzwords, right? Why don't we educate ourselves around what that means? And prompt engineering is actually great for people who come from a linguist background. And basically what it means is they're just taking the inputs of these large language models, and they're feeding them with the right inputs, right? And then testing it over and over again so that these things come up with more proper answers that are a bit more factual and not incorrect. So we're helping fine-tune these models to be better. And these are new roles that no one ever talked about 2 years ago. They may phase out in the next 5 years, depending on what new technology comes up. But we should be in a place where we can educate people about the new roles that are coming up, the new skill sets that are required, and transferable skills that can be applied. And I'm not saying everyone should go into tech, because we cannot have everyone in tech, because we still have other industries that are equally important. But people who feel passionate about it, who are drawn to it, who should be in tech, right, should be approached and positioned to be, you know, hired and skillful enough to work in the industry. And we should actually make an intentional program towards people from diverse backgrounds, because to your point, this is technology that is serving the world. And most of the issues we have with AI today is because most of the teams that built it are not diverse. So most of the problems, they wouldn't think about it because they're not problems akin to them. They're not even aware that these problems exist. So how can we build applications and products for the world when it's representing only 5% of the world's population? Then of course it's going to be inaccurate. Then of course it's going to lead to a lot of issues like biases and lack of transparency and lack of trust. And if you're thinking on a business side of point of view, then of course it's going to lead to dropping profits and revenue, because you're not going to have as many customers as you plan to have. So I think there's so many things that we should do there, but people need to be, governments and organizations need to be a bit more intentional about addressing this small pie of people who have been left behind. And it has to start from schools. We need to have a strategy for schools and people in universities and people, you know, who are job seekers and people in career and all of that. So it's a whole big problem, but I think we should talk about it, not just talk about it, but walk the talk. And it's beyond just having DEI in organizations. We've gone beyond that. Is DEI in AI?
100%. And you said very well, Tojub, it's not only about organization and company, it's about all, the whole society. It's about education, school, where, no matter the level, we have to empower those people, the young generation, the parents as well, share with them that this is a space of massive opportunity for their children, for their family. And if they feel interested, for sure, we will not push them, but if they feel interested, there is a kind of support by many organizations, right, where they can jump on and take benefit out of it, right, which is very important. And we need them. This is the most important thing. We need them there, because to build trust technology, we need people coming from different perspectives. We don't need only people coming from, like, kind of my backgrounds, AI and technology. We need also people coming from all other domains, from marketing, from communication, from financial aspect, you know, from social humanity, from neuroscience, for sure, we need them for sure. But I mean, it's a pluridisciplinary AI. It's not only about technology. And we need those people around the table. And I think when you work on responsible AI, you feel it much more, this need, because it's very important to those, to have those kind of voices, different voices around the table. Otherwise, it will end up in the same conclusions by the same people thinking the same way. And I experimented many times, Toshio, when I lead teams to build AI, right, products and services. And generally, it's not that much diverse. I have one woman, girls, like, it's not, if I have two in a team of 10, it's like it's a magic moment, right? Like, I'm surprised, everyone is surprised, but we did it by purpose, by saying, okay, we need to bring her, we need to encourage her, right? We need her around the table. Otherwise, we feel like I am the only person around the table saying, like, okay, we are talking about a new products for women, right? But we've built in that, guys. No woman around the table, and only me, but I'm not represented everyone, right? Which is very important to say it. So it's very important, right, to have this diverse team. But as you said, if people don't know about those opportunity, they will not go for it, right? So it's very important to share those informations. And I spend my time, like, whenever I'm invited in schools and higher educations, like Pointe-Chaussée, Ashrosée in Paris, Harvard in the United States, MIT, Stanford, I love going and talk to students. I love that because, firstly, it's a kind of discussions, like engaging conversation. So you have a lot of questions. People are very curious. And also you learn a lot, which is people think that you are here as a speaker. So you are given something, right, as knowledge. For me, I see it from different perspective. I'm here to learn as well, because people around the tables are coming like from different domains, backgrounds, cultures, you know, and so on. And I think United States is one of the examples, because it's a lot of immigrations and, you know, people come from a lot of cultures and you learn too much. And it's in both sides. And it's very important to say that diversity and inclusion is now urgent. It's urgent. And we need to find the way to make it really exponential, accelerated, in order to have all these important people, right? They will build this trust for everyone. And it's very important to have them. Now, I still come back to the question about the book, because we want to know much more about the main purpose of this book and who should read the book as well. Is it only AI experts? I love asking this question because I'm sure it's not only for AI experts, but let us know.
Yeah, so the vision behind the book, so I do a lot of talks on responsible AI anyway, right? And I talk about it in the form of a framework to say, you know, you can look at fairness as a different component, you can look at privacy, you can look at transparency and explainability, you can look at human rights frameworks, you can look at data ethics. So that's what the book really comprises of, is all of this, and robustness and AI, starting off with AI principles. It's really meant for industry. So what I've noticed is, because responsible AI is a very new and nascent field, right? Yeah. It's not been here for a very long time. It's not as old as AI. It's still led by the research organizations and the research communities who are doing a great amount of work in it. But I feel like there's a disconnect between the work that is coming out, or the conclusions that are coming out on the research side, and it's not trickling through into industry who are building these AI systems. So for me, it's just an opportunity to highlight some of the work that has been done and put it in a very comprehensive manner that people can understand, look, if I'm building an AI application or model, these are the different things I need to look at. And these are the challenges that people have actually faced. So there are lots of examples in the book, you know, of like either facial recognition going wrong, or the Siri landmark case in the Netherlands, where the human activists won a case against the Dutch government for infringing on people's privacy, and so on and so forth. So it's just to bring it to life, of just being aware, that there are issues with AI models, but it's highly beneficial. And there's a chapter that just talks about AI for good and what how AI can actually lead to humans, you know, be beneficial to humanity. And that's actually what pulled me to it in the first place, right? When I actually thought that AI has a potential of providing a cure for cancer. We're not there yet, but it can be done. And, you know, it's like it can solve, you know, it can help with climate change. It can help with a lot of natural disasters. A lot of people are using it for suicide helplines. It does have a lot of potential to help humanity. But at the same time, like anything that exists, it will have its limitations. But we need to be aware of these limitations as well, right? It's the same thing we've just talked about in terms of education and literacy. It's important, whatever technology you're building or whatever thing you do in life in general, it's just like going into a relationship. You have to know that relationships don't always work out. You know, you can have issues with your partner. Sometimes you don't want to talk to your partner or see your partner. These things exist. You can't just go thinking, oh, it's going to be a bed of roses and oh, it's all going to be all lovey-dovey. So it's the same thing, right? Using technology, you have to be aware that, you know, if I'm actually going plan to either use this application or build it, these are the limitations and these are the potential solutions that can help avert and reduce these problems. I don't believe we'll ever have bias-free AI, and you know, some research scientists do use bias to help a technology to actually make it better. Mm-hmm. So an AI application is sometimes good to have bias in it to help maybe like influence people's perceptions of a certain keyword, for example, that is prevalent there and make people more aware of it and use it more freely. So it has its pros and cons, but we need to be realistic that we're never going to have any AI system as of today that is 100% bias free. That's not possible, but we can reduce the number, the percentage from, mm-hmm. you know, maybe 50% to like maybe 10% and measure these percentages. And there are lots of tools and research papers out there and work that has been done that people are not really aware of. So the book just encapsulates all of these things. I think it's a small book. I feel it's a small book in my head, and I can't write for too long. I can't read for too long either. But it's just to, you know, highlight the problems, make people aware, and offer potential solutions to address these problems.
It's great. And as I said every time in this podcast, if we can encourage people to write books, why not? Let's do it. How long it takes to write this book?
It's hard work. I'm never going to recommend anyone to do it. Okay, I'm only joking, but you really want to do it. So I started in June last year, July, and it's just finishing now. Okay. But that said, I finished the book a few months ago, but it had to go through the publisher reviews. True. And it's going through reviews. So it's going through a series of reviews. I'm slowing it down. But for this particular topic, it was just very difficult because in honest respect, there's not a lot of books like this that exist. We have a lot of books citing the problems, but this is more like a practical book that goes through each chapter and cites a problem, but cites a potential solution with potential tools that are available, open source tools that are available to address the solutions. And it's really hard to find other books like that on responsible AI right now, because again, it's a new topic. So it was hard for me to gather all these examples and, you know, break it down in layman's language, assuming that the readers are people that are not necessarily from ML backgrounds, but maybe just working in a tech organization who want to learn more and maybe influence the engineering teams that are working on it. Or we might actually have engineering teams who are currently building the ML models, but have no clue about responsible AI. So it was hard work. Previously, before that, I was writing a fiction book, which I still want to go back to. But so that was meant to just educate you know, the overall world population on AI, and it's to be fiction. Because I think, to your point, it's really important for people to understand what AI is, because we use it every day. It's in our lives, whether we like it or not. So we have to be aware of this is what it is, especially for the next generation, because I cannot imagine what their lives would be. I'm sure self-driving cars would be all over the roads by then, you know, and we'll be talking to our phones will be talking back to us, not like Alexa and Siri, but like in a whole different way. So everyone needs to be ready for this revolution and be aware again of what you can trust and what you can't trust and the limitations that they currently have.
It's impressive. I like what you said, and I think we need such book to break it down much more to people, right, and industry as well, because they need it. Now we have a question mentioned as a bonus. Like, I don't know if you have an idea, but we will ask a question because our audience asks always this question. If there is a masterclass or a Tojo that you would like to offer in the coming, let's say, 6 to 12 months, What will be the content?
So a few things, understanding the power of you, who you are, your authentic self, what you bring to the table, your superpowers, what makes you, right? And building your confidence. I think that's the first thing, especially for women. You know, again, due to societal biases, it's very hard for women to speak up. And when you do, you kind of get punished. You know, it depends on the environment that you're in and the circles that you're in. But it's almost like women are not really meant to air their views, because we are not meant to have views, right? We're just meant to look pretty and get on with it. But I mean, I think it's very important for us to build our confidence. And again, if you're talking about the tech industry, which is like an old boys club, and it's all full of, you know, white male, you want to think about how you can still be confident in who you are as a person, what your skill sets are, what your superpowers are, and how you can always like bring that to the table. So that's very important. I think another thing is transferable skills. It's a bit that is always forgotten or ignored. People do not understand the power of having transferable skills. Like, you know, if people want to switch industries or switch careers, they always think they have to start all over again, and they have to go back to university and study another master's or study another PhD. And I'm like, you don't have to do that. You already have a wealth of experience that you might think is not applicable for this next phase that you want to go into. But I'm pretty sure there will be about 30 to 40% skills in there that you can easily apply to your new role or to your new path. And all you need to do is just recognize what these skill sets are, recognize what the skill sets are for the new career you want to get into, and be sure that that's what you want. You don't want to go through all this headache and then get there and go, hey, I hate this. Right. So make sure you are attracted to it. You feel passionate about it. You feel excited when you think about it. And then, you know, do like a mapping exercise. Understand what these transferable skills are, what you have and what you're lacking. And what you have is great. So know how to learn how to speak about them, and then think about stories and examples you can give to buttress the fact that, you know, these are my skill sets and this is why I think these skill sets are important for this role based on my experience. And then the gaps that you have, then you want to upskill on those gaps. But you find out that you don't need to upskill on everything, because there are still some things that are really important. And then I think, you know, identify where your dream role is. Make sure that, you know, like I said, you know where you're going into, and you're not going to go through all this headache to think this was a waste of time. But that's also okay, right? Because if you find out that it was a waste of time, at least you know what you absolutely hate, which is another good indicator for what you might actually like. And the next thing is just have a plan, have a path, have a strategy, plan on how you're going to go into that new career, that new role, and just go for it. And if it doesn't work out, there's so many other paths and careers available for you to take on.
I love what you said about transferable skills. And I think this part of bonus will help much more women to think about jumping on AI and technology opportunity, because you kind of break down to them how they can walk through, right, in a very easy way, at least as you said. But I know that by if they apply, like what you said about, think about what you have as skills today and as experience, and try to see where you want to go and design the path, right, and ask for help and support. It's very important also. You will find a lot of mentors, people around of you who can help and support, but you need to raise your hand, right? And ask for it, which is, I think, very important. Now the stage four, Toju, is about the ideal of trust. Basically, like 2 years back, actually on 2021, we launched a podcast named The Ideal of Trust. And we have amazing speakers from World Economic Forum, also from Google, as usual, but also from other company, coming from NVIDIA, from Singularity University, from XPRIZE, and so on. And now we break it down as a stage in this podcast as well, this show. And we want to ask you some question about that. You spoke often about responsible AI you are working in, whether in conferences like World FinTech Festival, the Scottish AI Summit, we name like at least some example, right? But also in academia, very important forum like Cambridge Tech Week. And our question is much more about what can we learn a little bit more about responsible AI principles and how organizations should implement it? Like if you can help us understand much more and help our audience to work through this complex topic, right, about responsible AI?
Yeah, I think it's always important to start off with AI principles. And I'll use Google's as a good example, because I think they're quite comprehensive. And OECD has some, Microsoft has some, you know, there's so many other organizations that have AI principles, but you find out that they're all basically covering the same kind of categories and the same kind of topics. And, you know, you want your AI or application or model, more the application really, because the model powers the application, to be socially beneficial. So we've talked about AI for good, right? It has to be, you have to be intentionally building AI to benefit people, not just for profit making. You can do that if you want to, of course, for a startup and an SME, but it's like understanding that, you know, the capabilities of this technology is so much bigger, and it can be scaled into so many different ways, that you want to make sure, you know, whatever application or AI application that you're building or using, it's actually going to be beneficial and not harmful. That's very important.
Yeah.
The next thing you want to make sure that is that it's not reinforcing any form of biases, right? So we know as human beings, we grow up in different communities, and we grow up with biases, where we're taught so many things, and we kind of like grow up with so many beliefs. And some people decide to filter them as they grow older and just, you know, accept people as they see them. And some people don't. They hold on to it and say, this is what my mom taught me. This is what I believe. And you're bad and I'm good and all of that. But you don't want that in technology. We've talked about that again. And, you know, that's one of the things that got me really interested in responsible AI, is like, I kept on thinking, you know, if we don't put in all the guardrails that we need to put in now, yeah, and this technology is out there years to come, it's going to be terrible, right? Because then it's a bit too late. How do you put in guardrails on something that is already scaled out and adopted across so many different devices and people are already using? The only thing you can do is just recall all the technology back, but you really can't do that because sometimes you don't even know how far it's gone. And some people wouldn't want to give you their phones back, for example, they've paid money for it. So it's going to be a whole chaotic situation if, you know, we do have technologies out there that are like 100% biased, propagating bias in full form. We don't have that today, thankfully, but it's important for us to be aware that there are so many issues with these technologies, and the ways we can reduce these issues and being aware of those and doing the right thing, right? Not waiting for a regulation. It's almost like being having a responsible attitude and approach towards things, and not waiting for someone to come hit you with a stick and say, you know, why are you doing that? And I'm going to fine you £100 million to make sure that you do things properly. I think we should actually just have some form of responsibility as individuals and as organizations. The next thing is we want to make sure that it's transparent and explainable as much as possible. That's already, we know that's a very well-known problem in AI, the problem of the black box, you know, especially with the large neural networks and using deep learning and generative AI, for instance. But there are lots of like tools and artifacts that are already out there, like Google launched a responsible AI toolkit, which has like data cards and model cards, which just provides some more documentation that people can use. Shedding some more light about their models and about their data and the data sources and the data curation methods, and you know, the way the models make a decision and the way they fine-tune them, just some more information so that if people have questions like regulation and stakeholders, we can say, hey, this is what we actually outlined. Or if, you know, the people who built these things have left the company or moved teams, right? You don't want the knowledge to just remain in someone's head, and they may not even remember, or they may not know. So these are important things that are out there. And then on the flip side, you want to be able to say these are the things that will make sure our AI systems do not do. So we're not going to build any AI systems that could be weapons for mass destruction, for example, that could harm people, that could propagate harm knowingly, right? And you make that a principle. So these would be like AI governance principles that should guide your organization. And you can have an AI team, depending on how large the organization is, have a governance team who does like reviews. So, you know, you can do like a monthly review, a weekly review, looking at the different products that are about to be pulled out, and seeing if they abide by these guidelines, and then providing some tools and some guidance on how to prevent them. You know, and if you notice any products that seem to not to hit the mark and seem to be violating some of these principles, you call it back, recall it, make sure it doesn't get launched until these problems are fixed.
I love what you said about the fact that we have not weights regulation, AI regulation. We need those diverse people. We need those principles. We need those guidance. We need those framework as well, right? And the governance in order to build those trust technology and make it safe for everyone, right? Another part, it's about bias. You talk about bias, and every time I say AI, don't accuse AI. AI is not creating bias. AI is just revealing the bias that already exists in data. And when it comes to data, means these processes, these whole life, right? Whether in systems, in businesses, that generate this data. So it's not AI who is creating bias. AI is just revealing the fact that exists already. So at least take it from the positive side that if you don't know it before, now you know it. So it's time to remove it, right? This is the point. Every time I say that, don't accuse AI. AI, till now, is not creating anything. It's revealing what exists already, right? This is the most important. And I think we are not that much far from the fact that AI will create in a true way. And even generative AI is not a true creation from my perceptions. It's a kind of help and support in us to have those kind of imagination, like a kind of feeling like much more free in a way, right? Having much more information up to our hand, which is very important as well. But we need to question everything that we receive, right? Because we saw a lot of images about presidents, about leaders and so on. Like we are going in a way, like if we are not questioning what we are seeing in this web internet, let's say it, there's a big issue. And regulation will not save us. Regulation, it's very important. It's very important. It's urgent, right? But it will not save us. Why? For one only reason, because AI is an exponential technology. And when it comes to exponential, no one will be in the same level of it. No one. Only education will save us, because people will be aware. And once people are aware, they support each other's. They will create this awareness and they will say, okay, stop here. This product is not good for my society, my community, whatever, my family, and so on. And it's very important to talk about education more and more. And I think it's very important also to say that education, if we take like one step back, education today is not adaptable to this future. And I'm talking about the whole system. And it's very important to say that it's time to reboot the education system in order to help and support our children to really embrace and create the futures. And I think this is where we have to invest much more in the 5-10 coming years. And I think what is doing the organizations like Diverse AI, Women in Tech, AI Exponential Thinking, and much more in the world, and we need them, it's educating people, empowering people, and it's important, but it will not be enough. This is where we have to stand and make much more. Now, I love the engaging discussion with you, Teju, and we are moving to, let's say, the last stage. It's a kind of have fun with AI. It's a Chinese portrait. And generally, our audience propose those questions. So we feel like, firstly, curious and also grateful to ask you this question. So questions are 5 questions to know more about you. Very quick questions. So means very quick answers. The first question is, if you are a book, you will be?
Becoming by Michelle Obama.
Wow. Love. I have the question about that. I read the book. I love it. So obviously it's a very good book and it's inspired, I think, millions of people around the world. And I think the people who have the privilege to meet her, I think, yeah, I mean, to meet the family Obama, I think it's a big privilege for them as well, because they learn too much from them. Question 2, if you are a movie, you will be?
Tina.
Sorry?
Tina by Tina Turner. Tina. So Tina Turner, who just passed away, I'll be Tina. I recently, actually, I've not watched the movie, but I've watched the play. And I know the plays is reflective of the movie, and her story is just so powerful. I don't know if you know much about her story, but how she just rose through the oppression that she had, an abusive marriage. And, you know, she became a pop star at 40. That's the age where people actually go back from being, you know, famous and all that. Her story is incredible, absolutely incredible. So, yeah, that's what I'll be.
Question three, if you are someone from history, you will be?
Rosa Parks.
Wow. Question four, if you are a famous monument, you will be?
The Leaning Tower of Pisa.
I love this place. I was there two times.
amazing piece of architecture.
Nice. And question five, if you are a hashtag, you will be?
Shaping the future.
Nice. So as now we are already in the conclusion, and it was a very nice engaging conversations. We at the end of this unique discussions, Toji, the floor is yours. If you wanna share your biggest achievement, a quote that resonates on you, any message that makes sense to our audience.
Yeah, I'll say writing the book was like a biggest challenge for me. It was just hard piecing all those things together in the midst of, you know, working full-time at Google, being a single parent, leading so many organizations, doing so many speaking. It was just really crazy to find the time and have the right mindset to write the book. So that was great. And I think I'll say one good quote that I like is by Gandhi, which is live as if you were to die tomorrow and learn as if you were to live forever. And I do live as if, you know, who knows, tomorrow's gone, but I want to make an impact within this little time that I have, because you never know where we're going to leave this earth.
I love what you said about the impact. It's very important to inspire much more people to go for it and create an impact, a positive impact, support each other. I think we are going to this exponential technology era, right? Where technology is almost everywhere. But as I said every time, it's about our unicity, our authenticity, and our resilience. And I think we are able as human to support each other and to build this brilliant, inclusive, just future, right? And I think this is why we do this kind of podcast show and inspire. And I'm so thankful to you as well to join this show, Humanize AI. Thank you very much, Toji, to be with us today.
Thank you very much, Lotta. It was an absolute pleasure. And well done for all the great work that you're doing on this. This is amazing.
Thank you very much.